And again, they're just the simplest things you could imagine at some level. If you view it as if you view the payoff as fitness, that if you just assume that you make more and the rate at which you make more is greater, if the fitness is greater, then that's the only thing that goes into the replicator dynamics. And what's sort of nice is there can be some background fitness, that, you know, some background reproduction rate, and there can be some background death rate, and doesn't matter what they are, the replicator dynamics for the fractions are all the same. So I was just going the doing the replicate. This is just the example, you know, very simple example of just sort of working out the replicator dynamics for symmetric 2x2 games. So symmetric again means that the payoffs are the payoff matrices are the same for the two players. Okay, so, and again, in order for that, in order for that to be true, like for instance, down the diagonal, the payoffs have to be equal. Okay, and so of the games I did, the Prisoner's Dilemma is symmetric, but the matching pennies is not. Because remember, you did the matching pennies, and if the pennies matched, you know, if the pennies matched, one player won and one player lost, right? Because it was always somebody lost and somebody won. Okay, so it is a restricted class, but what's nice is you'll see it's really easy to work out. So that's a plus. Okay, so again, what I had done at the end was basically I had argued, again, now this discussion of the replicator dynamics is from that book by Weibel, with more steps tossed in. Okay, and basically I argued that when you're doing, in terms of figuring out what the upshots of the games are and what the equilibria are, etc., the game is equivalent to a game that actually just has diagonal entries. Okay, and so here again, you're using the symmetry. And again, the 1-0 is entirely trivial. The other one sort of is a little bit of arguing. Again, this idea, well, it's only these differences that matter. And then there was that typo, right? And then, but you can just work out what I'm going to work out now and see that it's true. Okay, so you don't even have to believe me that, of course, I'm going to work the simple case, but you could go do the general 2x2 matrix to get the dynamics, and you will see that it's all true. Okay, and so again here, A1 is equal to an A11 minus A21, A2 is equal to A22 minus A12, right? And we worked that out, and that was the correct one. Okay, so and this is like a really simple matrix, right? Because it's diagonal. Okay. So now let's just work out the replicator dynamics. Because again, you start from the payoff matrix, and then you, you know, and then and now we have a recipe, right? So I'm just going to plug into the recipe and do this. So okay, so we're looking at the rate of change of the fraction of strategy I, probably 1. Okay, okay, and. This is the general equation, U E I X minus U X X X I. Okay, so now let me just look at X1. Okay, all right. And so, so what's this? All right. So this says, all right, I is 1 now. Okay, so it's like strategy 1, and you want to know the payoff. If you pick strategy 1, if the population had a mixture in which the probability of everybody having strategy 1 is x, so the payoff here is just A1, which is the payoff if you have strategy 1, and then times x, because x is the probability that, you know, a guy playing strategy 1 who's playing a random guy in the population will end up playing a guy in the population who is using strategy 1. Okay, so that's the first term. Okay, and then the second term is UXX, which of course it doesn't matter which I you pick. And again, it's the same thing where, okay, so if X is, there's some probability of playing strategy one, and you pick a gun, you know, two people are pulled from the distribution now. So it's, again, it's the difference between pulling one from the distribution and pulling two. So now we're pulling two. The chances that they are both playing strategy one is X squared, right? Because X is the probability that you're playing strategy one. Okay, if one plays strategy one and the other plays strategy two, the payoff is zero. So I'm not doing it because the payoff is zero. And then the other possibility is I have this X2 here. Oh, I see. Right. So what am I doing here? I have, sorry, the notation changed a little. Okay, X, I need an X1. All right, so wait, X1, strategy one. So, yeah, X1 is equal to the probability of playing strategy one. Here, I, you know, again, what happened is, sometimes you just use X2 is equal to X1 minus X2, but what we're doing is we are going to simplify the assumption. So the notation is the probability of playing strategy 2. Okay, and X2 is equal to 1 minus X1. Okay, so I'm going to put 1 here because it's the strategy. Okay, so XX is the same. So this is X1 squared, and this is X1 squared. And again, lots of times in the formulas, I've just used X because I just picked strategy one. But in this formula, we actually keep strategy two, even though it's redundant, for the reason you will see. Sorry about that. Okay, so here's A1X1. Here's A1X1 squared, which again, this came from this term. Okay, this came from both guys played strategy one. Now we have both guys playing strategy two. The cross terms were zero. And so then this was A2X2 squared, okay? And again, in stuff I've done before, I just said X2 is 1 minus X1. But I don't do that here for the following reason, okay? A1X1 minus A1X1, okay? I use that X2 is equal to 1 minus X1, okay? Oh, wait, I forgot the XI part. Okay, so this has an X1 there. Okay, sorry. That's just how did, sorry. There, okay. So, and again, that just came from, I took this minus this, but then it has to be multiplied by XI, which I forgot to do. Okay, so now I have this thing and this thing, which again is that, and then I have A2, and then this is not there, sorry. The brackets, I put the bracket in the wrong place. There, okay? A1x1 minus x2 minus A2x2 squared x1. Okay, and now, why did I do this? Is because of this. A1x1 minus A2x2 x1 x2. Okay, and this is x1 dot. Okay, and again, it's not minimal in the sense that I put in x2, which is 1 minus x1. But the reason to do that is because it's really easy to figure out what happens in the equation if you do it that way. Okay, because the point is that x1 and x2 are they're numbers that are between 0 and 1. So they're always positive. And so if you say, is x1 getting bigger or smaller? Actually, let me put it up here. So x1 dot is equal to A1x1 minus A2x2 x1 x2. Okay. So if you ask the question, is x1 getting bigger or smaller? These things are always positive, and so you know they change, but they don't affect the sign of the result. Okay. And here you can really see what the behavior is. It's very simple. Okay. Okay. So the first point, which was the thing I made at the end of the last lecture, was Well, okay, we had this sort of dynamics that, you know, everything looked really, really linear, right? Because, you know, my payoff functions are just numbers times the fractions, and so everything's multilinear in the fractions. And the replicator dynamics just had, you know, dp dt, some constant times p. But despite the absolute simplicity of the model, in the end, the actual replicator dynamics are they're nonlinear equations. Okay, and that was why I got, you know, I felt, oh, it's worth taking a week of your time to tell you about it. Because again, what's happened in the literature that I've seen is that mostly people worry about, you know, find equations that go to nice fixed points because they know how to interpret the results. But I actually think that understanding the nonlinear behavior of these equations is going to be something that's going to be important in the future. And I said, oh, okay, well, that's a great thing to tell you about then. Okay, so that was thing number one. But now let's just continue with the replicator dynamics, okay? And so basically, the point is that if A1x1 is bigger than A2x2, then x1 will increase, right? And if vice versa, x1 will decrease. So then you can just sort of go through the cases, okay? So if you have A1, A2 is less than 0, okay? So what that means is that 1 is positive and 1 is negative, okay? And it's sort of intuitively clear, I think, that, you know, if, let me just do an example, okay, 1 minus 2, okay? All right, so it's sort of intuitively clear that, you know, the strategy 1, 1 is the winner. I mean, no matter what you do, that's going to be the winning strategy, okay? And again, what happens is that, you know, you don't want a mixed strategy because 1 is bigger than 0, and then you don't want this pure strategy because minus 2 is worse than all of it, right? So if this is, then basically one strategy, we'll call it a pure strategy. One pure strategy has positive payoff. Okay, all right. And if it's strategy one, then this is positive and A2 is negative, so this whole thing is positive. So X1 just goes up, it hits one, it's good, right? If the second strategy is the one with positive payoff, then this is negative, again, by assumption. We said the A1, A2 has a negative sign. So then this is negative, and then X1 just keeps decreasing until it hits 0. Okay, so if you do this one, and that's the only Nash equilibrium. Okay, so the evolutionarily stable state is either X1 equals 0, or x1 equals 1. And you know, not only that, but if you perturb it, you'll just go right back, right? Because just by the construction of the dynamics, if the evolutionarily stable state is x1 equals 0, if you make x1 slightly positive, then x1 will decrease. So again, now you can see that it's a completely stable fixed point of these dynamics. And and that's the same as it's evolutionarily stable. Okay, so now you have, so this is case one. Case two is sort of two cases, okay, but it's sort of, okay. So here they have the same sign, okay, and so there's, again, now there are two subcases, so we can say A1 and A2 are both bigger than zero, okay, so that's second subcase. In that case, let's do an example of that. So, well, I guess we'll do this one. All right. Wait, that's terrible pedagogic. We'll do it like this. There, that's much better. Okay, so you look at this and you say, well, okay, again, from the point of view of global fitness, you'd say, well, two is better than one, okay, but they're both perfectly good Nash equilibria. So now we're back into the situation where you're only locally optimizing when you do Nash equilibria. You're saying, is there another strategy that works against the other guy's better than the other guy's strategy? Okay, so let's just plug into this. Well, actually, let's just look at this thing again. So if these are both positive, then what happens is that x1 dot is greater than 0 if A1x1 minus A2x2 is greater than 0. And amazingly enough, the opposite is true. Okay. x2 is less than 0. Okay, so what happens is that if x1, if these are both positive, if x1 is big enough, then you go to one fixed point, and if x1 is small enough, you go to the other. Okay, so this is a case where there are two Nash equilibria. They're both pure, they're both evolutionarily stable, but which one you reach depends on the initial condition. Okay, so which equilibrium you reach depends on whether x1 is greater than or equal to a1 plus a2 or not. Okay. Okay. So again, if x1 is bigger than this, then you go to the one where you just hit where you hit this guy. And if you if x1 is small enough, then you go to this guy. Okay, but they're both evolutionarily stable. And again, you can do the same things. You can essentially read off from the dynamics, right? That let's say your x2 is 1 and x1 is 0, and that's your Nash equilibrium that you're discussing. Then you say, okay, well, let's let x1, you know, be small. And then say, well, where do you end up? And if x1 is small and then and this thing is negative, which happens because x2 is big and x1 is small, then you just flow right back where you were. Okay, so again, this is another case where you have pure state Nash equilibria, but there, which one you reach depends on what your population was when you started out. Okay, and then finally, there's the case where is it? This one, A1, A2 is 0, and if A1 is less than 0 and A2 is less than 0, then what happens is, and you can sort of see this. Well, let me do the example with the thing right here, minus 1, 0, 0, minus 2. I mean, it's sort of clear here that, you know, no pure state's going to be happy, right? And so the thing, because what the population really wants to do, the best this population can do is to have a player playing strategy 1 play a player that's playing strategy 2, right? Because the payoff, or you know, this is equivalent to, we'll put the zeros here. Oh, actually, we'll make this 1, we'll make this 0, we'll make this 2. You know, we're just adding everything in the matrix is added by 2, right? And again, you really want to have a guy playing, you know, playing strategy 1, play a guy playing strategy 2. So so you really want to mix state Nash equilibria. And it turns out here, again, you get the situation where the population doesn't change when A1x1 is equal to A2x2, but if the signs are flipped here, where A1 is less than 0 and A2 is less than 0, then what happens is it's stable. That's the stable equilibrium, okay? So in this case, I think I can do it in this much room. So again, you say, well, let's look at where the evolution stops, okay? Then you say that, you know, the x1 dot equals 0 when a1x1 is equal to a2x2. Okay, is that right? a1x1, right. And then you plug in, you know, x2 is equal to 1 minus x1. And then that says that x1 is equal to a2, a1 plus a2, which was, you know, here. Okay, and so then you say, okay, well, now let's let x1 plus something small. So now, finally, I'm hearkening back to what we did the first week, right? We're just checking the stability of that fixed point. It's the only fixed point for the dynamics. No, it's not, because x1 could be 0, x2 could be 0, okay? And you just check the stabilities of all the fixed points. It turns out this is a stable fixed point, and this Nash equilibrium is evolutionarily stable. Is evolutionary stable. Okay, so in this one, again, unless you start off exactly at x1 equals 0 or x2 equals 0, you end up at this Nash equilibrium. Okay, is it clear what you do here? Okay. Okay, so so hopefully at this point it's clear why this has something to do with what I did in the first week, because I realized there were a few days there when That was not exactly obvious. Okay, but at this point, you could see where essentially there's this whole other interpretation of you know, dynamics in terms of different kinds of rules that are applied to different kinds of systems. Okay, so then the next thing I wanted to do is, and again, the thing about 2x2 dynamics, like these symmetric 2x2 dynamics, is you always reach a fixed point. Okay, but that's not generally true. Okay, and I will either have, well, I will definitely have time to at least tell you, like, so it turns out there's a very slight modification of rock, paper, scissors, which is chaotic. Okay, which again is, you know, unpleasant in some ways, but pleasant in others, in the sense of, you know, people who are trying to make models of things that are, you know, that they want to have a nice, clean prediction, sort of don't like chaos. But seeing in such a simple game that you do, that chaos will show up and that it hasn't been really characterized, I think, means that, you know, there's a lot to do. Okay. But what I'm going to do now are a couple of really simple cases. These are situations where the dynamics just goes to a fixed point, or, you know, there's an evolutionarily stable state. You go up to it, everything's groovy. Okay, in the sense of nice, this march of the increase of fitness. Okay, you know the sort of picture that somehow evolution is taking you. Let me just say this before the end. Okay, so the point is that there's sort of this picture of, well, evolution, if you do this, where just the more fit guys reproduce faster, evolution just sort of takes you up this fitness thing, and things now are more fit than they were, you know, 100 years ago, whatever. Okay, and that it's just sort of march upward in the fitness landscape. Okay, but that's only true under very restricted conditions. Okay, and at least in these models. But in some sense, that's why I think it's interesting to study these models. All right. But there are cases where it is a march of progress up the fitness curve, right? And so those are the cases I'm going to do, all right? The ones where it does exactly what, you know, this picture of evolution, of, you know, you just keep culling out the weak and the strong, or, you know, whatever, and the average fitness goes up. Again, that's not generally true, but there are cases when it is true. Okay, so, so the first thing I'm going to do is say this one thing, is that you, on the one side, we had evolutionary stability. And asymptotic stability of replicator dynamics. Okay, so basically, this says that, okay? Again, we don't know when the replicator dynamics will cruise into a nice evolutionary, you know, into a asymptotically stable state. And again, what I mean by asymptotic stability is exactly what we meant at the beginning, where if we change the population a little bit away from that fixed point population, whether it goes back to where it came from or whether the perturbations grow, exactly the same sense. That's what we mean by asymptotic stability. But then remember, before I actually put the dynamics on, I talked about, oh, well, we have some population that's sort of local, you know, that's in a Nash equilibrium, you know, interpreted as this fitness thing. And is it stable to invasion by mutants? Okay, so the statement is that this implies that. Okay, that if you, that's sort of why evolutionary stability was defined the way it was. Okay, and how you prove that is by using that Kullback-Leibler relative entropy function that I introduced, okay? And so here, and again, I introduced it in this sort of transition rate dynamics way where, you know, again, you know, and in some sense you could sort of see why it would apply, right? So I did it for these transition rate dynamics. And these sort of have a transition rate feel to them. But again, these are equations for the x's, and the x's, the equations for the x's are nonlinear, and so it's not entirely obvious that this was going to work, but it turns out that it does. Okay, so basically, again, recall. Okay, so basically, again, there's, you know, this is what I'm going to do is show that this implies this. Okay, so you don't know, given a model, whether there's an evolutionarily stable solution, but if there is, then you know, you can put on the replicator dynamics with the population near to that state, that fixed point, and it'll go, and it's stable in the sense that the dynamics will drive you back to it. Okay. Okay. So recall, what the hell's a recall? Kullback Leibler. I really have a mental block about the name of this, but that's my problem. Relative entropy. Okay. And again, the definition is like this, okay. Okay. And so again, what we have here is C is this again is ripped off from Weibel's book. C is the set of, you have these strategies that are represented in the mixed state Nash equilibrium. Okay. So it's just, it's a strategy space. Okay. And it doesn't matter. And the restriction to that is irrelevant because of the form of the function. So it can just be all of the strategies, right? And the reason is, if the strategy is not in the mixed state Nash equilibrium, this x here will make it be zero, right? Okay. And as physicists, we're perfectly happy to say, oh, okay, well, it doesn't matter that the log blew up because the log blows up slower than the x goes to zero, and for us that's fine. But again, okay. So again, what you do is you just take all the strategies, and then you have a probability distribution that is the probability distribution in the Nash equilibrium, and then you're comparing it to a different probability distribution, which is the state that we're starting the dynamics from. Okay? Okay. So again, the xi is are sort of the probabilities in the evolutionarily stable state. Okay, and the y are the probabilities in, you know, the state where we're starting our dynamics from. Okay, probabilities in some other state. Okay, so that's just the definition. It's the same definition as I had last week. Okay, and in the notes, I have a different proof, which is the same proof, again, ripped off from Weibel's book of H, you know, recall HX of Y is greater than or equal to zero and equals zero only if Y equals X, if the probability distributions are the same. Okay, so, but I'm not going to prove it again because I was looking at it again and I'll just mess it up again. But again, it's a standard result and the things are copied in the notes. Okay. And you know what I mean? But again, it follows just from the fact that log functions convex. But there's, you know, a different write-up of that. Okay, but I'm not going to prove it again because I probably would just mess it up again. Okay, so now, that's the setup. And so then what do you do, right? Well, what do you do is you have some function. And the only thing we know, right, is the equation for x dot, right? I mean, that's the only thing we've done the whole time, is when we did replicator dynamics, is we said, well, okay, we now have an equation for x dot. And you say, well, all right, well, how do we show this thing increases? Well, we'll just take the time derivative of x, right, of h, right? Because that's all we know how to do, right? That's all we've done is we've just written a dynamical equation, right? So here we go. So we have d by dt of hx of y. Okay, so again, the reference state is the equilibrium state, and the brand x is the state where we're going to see what happens to it. Okay, all right. So here we have this, and so let's just put in the formula d by dt of, and I'm just going to sum over I because we're physicists. That's fine. Xi log yi over xi. Okay. Now xi does not depend on time. Remember that was like the equilibrium state, so it doesn't have any time dependence. And so this is just equal to d by dt sum over I, XI. Oh, let me just do one. Okay, well, no, it's okay. It's, well, why don't I do this? Log YI plus something that's independent of Y, right? It's XI log XI. The log XI log XI is time independent because, again, X is the equilibrium distribution. So this we get rid of. And so then this is equal to sum over I, all right? Okay, and again, XI doesn't depend on time. So all you've got to do is differentiate with respect to Y. XI divided by YI dy dt. Okay, so is that clear? Okay, and so now that's what replicator dynamics gives us, right? Is an equation for dy dt. And so then this is equal to I, XI divided by YI. And then now we just toss in the dynamical equation, minus u, yy, yi. Okay, and then this cancels that. Xi, u of ei, y, minus u of yy. The y's cancel, but now, this is just the definition of negative, okay, u, what the hell, why, where'd the minus sign come from? Oh, well, no, it's, look, the minus sign comes in next. Okay, is the sum over xi. Okay, no, the x, yeah, xi. Oh, I did this. No, sorry. Okay, xi, and this is just equal to, the point here is that this is u of x and y. Okay, I have a minus sign here, which I just don't see. No, it doesn't decrease. The h, x log x, right, so the minus sign, okay. This should be, okay. H is, you know, typically the entropy is minus rho log rho. Okay, so this should be minus. But anyway, let me just have it so it always increases, because it does, you know, it's okay. So this is just equal to, all right, this term's independent of x. Sum of xi is equal to 1. So this is just a 1. This is just equal to u of xy minus u of yy. So the notes have a minus sign, but it doesn't matter. Okay, so what happens is that this thing is exactly what came into the definition of evolutionary stability. Remember, it was this question of, well, if I have my other state and I invade, you know, is it is the fitness strictly less than? Okay, and so what happens is that the time derivative of this thing is zero only when x equals y. And if x does not equal y, then this guy has higher fitness by definition of evolutionary stability. So this sort of motivates that definition of evolutionary stability, you know, why it was chosen exactly the way it was. But anyway, again, that, you know, what happens is that, you know, the only way that you can't do better than y is if you go towards x. Okay. Okay, so that's thing one. And again, so if you have evolutionary stability, then this is the argument that shows you that you have asymptotic stability. Again, that the replicator dynamics cruise into that fixed point, and if you perturb the state, you go back to it. Okay, so so then the final thing, I think, well, yeah, this will probably be the last thing I do. It will be the last thing I do, I'm sure. Okay, so then finally, again, I think this last thing I'm doing, I think, is useful because it sort of shows you how restrictive it is. The assumptions are that tell you when you actually have the situation where fitness increases monotonically. Okay, so there is a class of games where fitness does increase monotonically. If you do a coordinate change, okay. So and they're called doubly symmetric games. Okay. All right. These are two-person games. And in the doubly symmetric game, the payoffs for the players are equal. Okay. So it's not just so e.g., all right? So, you know, you have A1, 1, A2, 2. A 1 2 A 2 1. Okay, that's the payoff matrix, right? And again, symmetric. Okay, symmetric means the payoff matrix is the same for all the players. All right, but there's doubly symmetric, and doubly symmetric means the payoff matrix is symmetric. Okay. Okay, so doubly symmetric, if A12 is equal to A21, then it is doubly symmetric. Okay, and the thing is, the more you think about it, the more you realize what a restrictive condition this is, because it sort of says that there's never any conflict, you know, because you're used to this thing of the thing about game theory, right, is that, well, if I get more food and this other guy gets less, and tends to sort of set up in this competitive kind of situation. But a doubly symmetric game, you know, either everybody wins or everybody loses. Okay, and so it turns out these are the dynamics for which you can show that nothing funny happens in the dynamics, and you just sort of march if you put your if you make the right change of coordinates, that in the right units, fitness just monotonically increases and life is a march of progress. Okay, so I'll do that for, but partly it's just to see that, you know, it's very restrictive, but to see why you need that. Okay, so let's again we're doing a replicator dynamics. And we want to prove that fitness is increasing. And so again, what you do is you write down d by dt of the fitness. Okay. So we start with d by dt. All right. And then we have this fitness. And again, we have this population where we're pulling two guys out of the population and they're playing against themselves. And so that's why it's y and y, because the strategies of the populations have to be the same, because both guys playing the game are pulled out of the same sample. Okay, so first we use the definition of the payoffs. Okay, because you'd say, well, how do we know this? Okay, but again, the payoffs are very special in the sense that we define them for the pure things. And then we just said, well, we just take the probabilities that you're playing the different strategies, and if you know, and everything's random and uncorrelated. And so if we know the fractions playing each strategy, we know the payoffs. Okay, so we have I is summing over the strategies for, you know, player one. J is summing over the strategies for player two. And so now we are looking at the pure strategies and yi, yj. Okay, and all right, and now we take the time derivative. Okay, and the U's do not depend on time, right? The U's are just these matrix elements that are just numbers. Okay, so this is equal to ij, U, ei, ej. Okay, yi dot yj plus yi, yj dot. Okay, and this is true. Okay, up until this point, I have not used the fact that it's a doubly symmetric game. I've used that it's a symmetric game because of this. Okay, but I have not used the double symmetry, right? Because I'm only using one payoff function for everybody. So, you know, and again, the way the replicator dynamics are interpreted, you know, again, we're just pulling out of one population, so all the games are symmetric. Okay, but at this point, to make further progress, and here also you could have more strategies. I haven't made a limit. It's a two-person game, but I haven't said it has to be a two-person game with two strategies per person. I just said it's a two-person game. Okay, okay. But now is where the double symmetry comes in. Okay, So again, the point is when you get up to this point, it's completely general, but there's nothing in general that you can say about the equation. Okay, so if you use double symmetry, then what happens is that these things have to be equal. Okay, because again, the payoff matrix, you know, why the payoff matrices are symmetric, and so then you can really you can interchange y and j, I and j, and everything. And everything stays invariant. Okay, the point is then that, well, actually, let me just, this is equal to 2 sum over I. I'll write the formula. Why did I do that? Okay, well, it's okay, I used it. Okay, u of e, I, and y. Okay. So, all right, so what did I do? I see what I did. It's okay. So just look at this term, okay? So u of ei, ej, yj, summed over j, is u of ei and y, okay? That's my definition, okay? So then, and then the yi dot is in the front, okay? Then what I did here is I could go back to, If I didn't use double symmetry, then I would have let me just do the other term. I get u of y ej. Okay. Well, actually, when I here. Okay. If I just do this right, I get the same thing. Only it's u of y and ej. Okay. But there explicitly, I use the double symmetry because by assumption, the payoff matrix is symmetric. Okay, so actually, let me, you know, so again, this is equal to, I'm adding a step, which you should always be aware of, you know, always be suspicious when I do it in the middle of a lecture, but hey, it's the last day, so I'm going nuts. U, E, I, I'm summing over the J, Y, I dot, plus sum over J, U of Y, E, E, J, Y, J dot. Okay, so this I just put in here. Okay, and now here explicitly I use the fact that the payoff matrix is symmetric. Okay, all right, and so I get this, and I'm not done because now I toss in the replicator dynamics is equal to 2. I'll put this in 2. Dt u of y and y is equal to 2 sum over I y I. Okay, and now I'm putting in replicator dynamics here, so I get u of e I y minus u y y. So again, that's the equation for y I dot that the replicator dynamics give you, u e I y. Okay. And so now it turns out, what do I want to say about this? Let me just write the formula, and then I'll again go backwards to tell you why it's true. Okay, I, Y, I. Okay, and it turns out this is equal to U, E, I, Y minus U, Y, Y quantity squared. Okay? And now everything in this equation is non-negative, okay? And so what that means is that fit in a doubly symmetric model where, you know, everybody wants the same thing, that's sort of what it's saying here, the fitness always increases. So as long as there are absolutely no conflicts, then everybody can get along famously, and things can only get better, okay? Now, I have to show you how you get from here to here, okay? And basically what you do is you expand out both terms. Okay, so what you got here is 2. Okay, so what I'm doing here again, I'm taking this term. Okay, so I have 2 sum over yi, and then I've got u of ei y squared. Okay, that is this times this minus u of yy u of ei y. Okay? All right, so that's the top thing. And now the bottom thing is 2 I y I u of e I y squared minus 2 u of e I y u of y y. That's there. And then plus u of y squared. Okay. So, all right. So this term cancels that term. Okay. And then 2 of these cancel 2 of these. Okay. And so you see, because there's a 2 here and there's a 2 and a 2 here. Okay. So what you end up with is the difference is 2 sum over I y I u of e I y u of y y. This has a minus, so I'll put the minus here. U of y y squared. Okay. So you pull the u of y y out, and then you use again this linearity, but this is just the sum of y I u of e I y. This is when you do the sum over I y I of the u. That's just u of y y. Okay, so this term equals that term, and they cancel, and so that's why that's an identity. Okay, and again, you can see in all of this that the nice results that you can get follow from the very simple dynamics that you put in at step one. But and somehow it's thought, oh, okay, this is great, everything is simple, but it turns out replicator dynamics are not simple. So I did want to just mention, the thing that actually, why I decided I wanted to cover this in the class is that it turns out, again, that, you know, sort of the picture that I've always had of the replicator dynamics was that, well, they were so simple that nothing interesting ever happened. But then I happened to run across a paper, and this is like, you know, why you were subjected to a week of this was that, you know, I don't know, about 6 months ago I ran across this thing, and I said, oh, I really need to understand more about it. And that was... it's this paper, it's referred to in the notes, but basically it turns out you'd say, well, okay, there's all this sort of nice dynamics and things flowing to fixed points, but it's very special. But, you know, what happened to all the rest of nonlinear dynamics? And this paper's not that new, but it's, you know, about 10 years old. And basically it turns out that even in a game as simple as rock, paper, scissors, if you change it very slightly, it's chaotic, okay? And so what this means for more complex models is, you know, obviously there's a lot of room for a lot of different things. And then the question of, well, how is it that, you know, we're still here however many billion years later if these equations are so prone to chaos? I think it's just an open question. So it turns out in the rock, paper, scissors, the game that they looked at, okay, so the usual rock, paper, scissors looks like this, right? So it's 0, minus 1, 1. Oh, wait, rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors. Okay, so paper beats rock, right? 1, 0, minus 1. And rock beats scissors. Wait, right, rock beats scissors. Minus 1, 1, 0. Okay, so that's what you're used to, okay? And what they did is they turned it in... not into a symmetric game, okay? And it's a usually it's a symmetric game, okay? But what they did is they generalized it to an asymmetric game, but a zero-sum game. So where somebody wins and somebody loses, but the sum of the payoffs is zero. Where, so there are two payoff matrices, one for player A and one for player B. Okay, and all the off-diagonal elements are the same. Oops. But minus 1, 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1, 1. But instead of having 0, they put a non-zero diagonal element, okay? Okay. And if epsilon x is equal to minus epsilon y, it's a zero-sum game. Okay, and what they showed is that if epsilon x, and this is the epsilon x equals zero is the case that's on your homework, and what happens is that if you do that, everything's sort of, you know, neutrally stable. Okay, you wander around, and that's why it's not evolutionarily stable, because the strategies aren't stable to invasion. But, you know, nothing bad happens. But if you, as soon as you make this thing non-zero, if you make epsilon x equal epsilon y, it's sort of a thing saying, well, you know, somehow you're not happy to tie, right? Somehow, you know, it's like, let's say B is the one where epsilon y is negative. Like, B is constantly trying to win, right, because tying is not good, right? And so then basically, then you know, and that's enough to destabilize everything. And then they were able to show that that's a completely chaotic system. And given the simplicity of the game, then, you know, that leads one to ask the question of, well, how often does that happen, as opposed to the march of progress, which, as you can see, has been derived only in very simple games. So that's where I'm going to leave you, because I don't know the answer to the question. And as far as I can tell, nobody knows the answer to the question. And that's why I thought it was worth telling you about this, because it looks to me that there will be a lot of there are a lot of interesting questions that I think can be answered in the next little while. Okay, so I'm done, all right? And so thank you for listening. And
I would like to do this
friend.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. I broke it. I don't think I broke it. If I broke it, fix it.
Okay, no, thanks a lot.